your billable could keep a person from even picking up your phone.
Thank you, thank you, and welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm an attorney who believes subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. I'm talking about more affordable legal services for everyday people and more predictable revenue for attorneys to help them pay down those six-figure student loans. In this episode, I chat with Nikosha Anderson, a legal services innovator looking at the subscription model as a must-have for the profession. We discuss why attorneys should price for the value of what they do, not how long it takes them, examine ways to use our legal knowledge beyond just giving legal advice, and the benefits of paid communities in general. It was a great conversation, and without further delay, here's the interview. Nikosha Anderson, thank you so much for being on the Law Subscribed podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
All right, and I do want to give a little bit of a background on how we met, but before I do, just give the audience a quick background about yourself.
Well, I am a business and intellectual property attorney. I live where Mickey Mouse lives, but I service clients throughout the United States. I essentially help women creatives and creatives on the internet protect their income producing ideas so that way they can operate in their zone of genius and not worry and understand that their things are secured and protected so they won't be robbed of them. So that's essentially what I do right now, and I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, so happy. And we met in a really incredible way, and I think I want to talk about it because attorneys can learn from it. And that is that I, and it all comes back to podcasting. There's a lot of podcasting in this story, so I know it's a little meta, but bear with me.
It works.
Totally, totally. you know, as I stare at our Blue Yeti microphones, right? So,
listen. They have coffee, we have Yetis.
Yeah. So I was on a podcast, Steve Fretzen's Be That Lawyer, and you're a listener of that podcast. And one of the things I was talking about, to no one's surprise, was the subscription model. And at the time of the interview, I was even still figuring out how I was going to launch Law Subscribed. And so I've even formulated a lot more of my ideas on the subject since then. But the episode aired, you heard it, you found me, you reached out, and you know, just it was such a nice reach out, and there was an aspect of the interview that happened to resonate with you that I definitely want to dive deeper into. And then we hopped on a Zoom and chatted and got to know each other, and I find out, you know, you have a podcast and you've been podcasting for a while. What, PUOpodcast.com, right? Link in the show notes.
Yeah. That's okay. It. You've been checking me out. I see what you did there.
Oh yeah, and it's a really good show, and what you do on the show also dovetails into the reason that you felt to you wanted to reach out to me, and so now I've been catching up and listening, you know, to your dulcet tones, and your co-host on the show, and so it's, you know, there's podcasting. There's not being afraid to reach out. There's listening and following up. I mean, there's so many great takeaways. And I was so thrilled to also learn that you are considering and developing this idea for a subscription model for your law practice. So,
yes.
So that's what I'd like to start with. Tell us, walk us through that journey of how you, you know, independently or what you were exposed to that made you think, you know, the subscription model, that's, you know, that's something that I want to do.
So practicing now is totally different from when we may have gone to law school. And of course, the trainings that we received was you either go work for a big firm, you work for government, or you open up your shingle and you just take whatever comes through the door. But if you do follow one of those models, and that's nothing wrong with that, but when you get into one, you learn the pros and cons of that model, whether it's government, big firm, little firm, whatever. Those models aren't serving lawyers today, and it's actually causing a lot of us to leave the profession, especially women, in great numbers. So for me, being a business lawyer, I am learning the revenue models of a lot of businesses don't always afford them, especially businesses of color and businesses owned by women, which is one of the fastest growing sectors of new business ownerships, they don't always have the revenue to keep a lawyer on hand. They may pay for one-offs here, formation here, contract review here, but they still have a lot of questions, and they may find themselves in situations where they really need someone they can pick up the phone and ask a question to make sure they're on the right track. So I thought, well, how can I service the people that keep coming to me but don't always want the bills that may be associated with me in those high numbers? Because it's shocking. I mean, if you look at what some of the billables are, I'm very reasonable for my area, but in some areas, depending if you're in a different locale, your billable could keep a person from even picking up your phone, because there are some lawyers who advertise their prices. I know I like to get you in my conflict check and get you in my intake before we get to that part of our relationship. But I think subscriptions is definitely where it's at. And I think when people think subscription, they think a reoccurring monthly thing like Netflix or Disney Plus. But we can take that in the law form, and people would actually be more embracing of it because it's predictable. They know what it is. They know what they're getting. It's consistent. And it will serve us when it comes to projecting revenue and all those things a whole lot better. So I think subscription is definitely where it is. And it's not something we should shy away from.
And if anyone's listening from Netflix or Disney Plus, feel free to sponsor this episode.
Well, Netflix won't sponsor. If you notice, they don't have any sponsorships because they don't recognize that model. But if your listeners or you want to learn more about the Netflix, listen to the podcast called Business Wars by Wondery. They did one called Netflix versus Blockbuster. Oh, listen, it was amazing. You learn a lot. And as law firm owners, we can definitely study what some of the bigger corporations are doing and integrate a lot of those practices in our business for sure.
So, you talked a lot about the positives of why you're looking at the subscription model, but was there like a moment that you could trace back to when you thought this is something worth trying for the legal profession?
Yes, it's one of those things when you have to send that five-figure bill, and then you get the client on the phone like, hey, is there something you can do for me? I kind of wasn't anticipating this, even though your retainer may say my billable was this. You'll get charged for this. This is that. And then I kind of, that conversation with that individual kind of had me thinking like, if someone kind of knew what was predictable, like a menu or something, then that will maybe make it a little easier for them to predict. Well, I selected this. I saw the price. I selected this. I knew the price. So then I can go back. Well, hey, in your proposal, you selected boom, 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 boom. So where's the confusion? So I switched to that. More flat fee, more like presented it as a proposal. The client goes in my system and they select which package they want. They see the price for the package. So there's no, covering the eyes here. You weren't blindsided. You knew what you were getting. And I think if we switch to that, that'll help. But it was still a little pushback. And I was kind of like, it has to be a better way. What can I do? Netflix is $16 plus fees and blah, blah, blah. Disney Plus is what, $25 if you got the premium streaming, whatever. How can I integrate this in my model? Well, people like to call me for one-off questions, but they don't want to get that $50, $150 invoice for that. And usually it's like stuff I can answer in my sleep. And I'm not saying price for how long it takes you, price for the value. Definitely got to switch to value-based pricing, but that's another story. Yeah, it was that conversation with that one particular client that kind of got me, I got to do this different, for sure. And so I started doing some research on who's doing this, what does that model really look like, how do I handle it, because you may have an agreement that says, hey, this person's going to pay me for 90 plus days, but then by the time they get to the 60th day, they want to cancel. Is there any penalties? Am I entitled to the additional 30 day of service, even though they didn't get it? What can I do? So I just started looking at other people's contracts. I started looking at Netflix contracts, Disney, what other subscription model contracts. And yes, there's a risk with anything because, I mean, in the traditional sense, you do the work and then you get paid for it later. So you're always at risk. But it's one of those things where how can I just try to make this as most predictable for me revenue-wise so I can say, can I take on that new software? Can I take on this contract attorney? Can I take on this temporary intern? Because I definitely believe in paying people for their work. So that allows me the ability to project a little bit more, which I think in law firms, we don't do a lot of business behavior things. We don't do projections. We don't really sit with our profit and loss and understand where the money is really going. And because oftentimes we have cash flow issues. If you follow that model, you're going to have cash flow issues because you're waiting on the money to come in, but money still has to go out. So then we do a lot of front loading with our own personal money, which could then be considered, you know, violating the corporate veil because you're, unless you document it and have the proper agreements to where the business will pay you back. You know, that's the business lawyer in me trying to, you know, shore it up. But we go into a lot of issues with cash flow.
Yeah. And so it sounds to me like you had, it wasn't working for you in at least one client experience. So mm-hmm. you had the mental flexibility and the growth mindset to say, what's another way to do this? And you started with the flat fee. And so that, you know, sort of you were already open-minded to alternative billing than the you know, industry standard of the billable hour. And then just being the innovator that you are, looked at the subscription model. And I haven't talked to anyone yet who actually went and read the contracts for the subscription services we all pay for.
I'm a nerd like that, so
that's great. I'm gonna have to go and do that myself now. Here I am, you know, host of Lost Subscribe, and I haven't even done that yet. So, super interested. I feel like we could have a whole episode just dedicated to breaking those contracts down.
Yes, we could. I look forward to it one day. I mean, they say some interesting things. They definitely repeat themselves a lot. We have signed over a lot. It's the same thing with the cell phone contracts. Nobody reads mm-hmm. them. We just want the service, mm-hmm. right? You haven't read Netflix's contract. You have not gone to Netflix.com and read those terms and services. Nobody has. We just want our Mad Men. We want our whatever show, Schitt's Creek. I love Schitt's Creek. So it's like, I just want to play my stuff and hear my da-dum. And I'm ready.
Oh gosh, I wonder, that was so spot on of a sound. I may have to censor that so we don't get a copyright strike.
Listen, it was,
you must listen to
we
your
weren't taken away. We didn't take away. We acknowledge ownership and, it belongs that as a right. That is a right of reserve of Netflix.com, Netflix Incorporated. I don't know what their moniker is, but it belongs to them. It's not mine.
Yeah. Oh, good, good. We're having fun. I love it.
Yes.
So have you had an opportunity yet to talk to, you know, your current clients, prospective clients, just any other people about what you're thinking about with the subscription model? And then what's been their feedback on that?
It's been super positive. Most business owners that I service and friends who may not be my clients but have businesses, I just kind of, hey, how would you feel about having a standard reoccurring cost for legal? Not nothing to break your head over, but with that, you get phone calls, you get quick reviews. How does that sound to you? A quick review. How does that sound to you? Or a fast review. How does that sound? Oh, I like that. And of course, I like that. Do you mean like I can pick up the phone and maybe schedule a time or send an email and I won't get a $300 bill? Yeah, you won't get a $300 bill. It's already included. And if you do anything that exceeds that, you know, that's something separate. But how much would you pay for that? Would you pay $1,000 for that? Would you pay $2,000 for that? Broken down on a weekly thing? Oh, is that like $200 or $250? Yeah, it's $250 a week. How does that sound? Oh, I like that. That's doable, it's manageable, and I can pick up the phone? Yeah. They love it.
Yeah.
So, and most people ask me, well, how does that work if you're licensed in one state, but your business is in another state? Well, I've been doing some research, and of course you have to go and do some independent research with your local bar because every state is different. But it's legal consulting. It's not necessarily personalized legal. So it would be considered a consultant, where you're getting the advice and acumen of a professional, but they're not actually, of course, doing the service. So it's kind of like a pick your brain session. And of course, it comes with multiple disclaimers, and you have to make sure it's obvious and make sure the client understands that they're not getting personalized legal advice and no attorney-client relationship and all that jazzy thing. So of course, go consult with your local bars. I'm not advocating for anybody to risk ruining those Esquire initials, but just do your research. There are other ways we can do what we do with the knowledge that we have. You just have to be a little bit more open-minded.
So here's a question for you. Let's say one of your legal consulting clients that's outside of the jurisdiction you're licensed in gets to a point where they actually need legal advice and they need an attorney-client relationship. Have you solved that problem, or in what ways are you thinking about solving that problem?
One of the ways I'm thinking of solving that problem is with my fast review system, is to have a legal directory where the attorneys sign up just for having access to that directory, and they would be the first recommendation. So if you're in bankruptcy in California, there would be maybe 2 slots and you pay a nominal fee to be listed, right? And that would be annual. So it wouldn't be month to month. Like, you would just pay an annual, I have this advertising.
An annual subscription. Mm-hmm.
Annual subscription for advertising to be on a fast review or a quick review and legal directory. And if something happens to where the client says, I need to get with a bankruptcy attorney, you will be a preferred referral. So like a referral service too, which is a subscription. So it's a multi-layered subscription service where the client will come for help, a business hotline help. And then if they need something that I can't provide, or, you know, then I will refer it out. We do that anyway. We refer out anyway. So why can't we monetize what we already do? How many times have someone picked up the phone, family, friend? Hey, let me ask you this question. Hey, let me stop that. Stop. Let's get some money. We're leaving a lot of money on the table. Other industries are doing this very same thing. Like, there are subscription models for graphic artists or marketing services. Like, if you need a whole team of marketing, I can't recall the name of the company, but there's a company that will give you a whole marketing team for a package that includes graphic, copy, all it. What's the difference?
Taco Bell with tacos.
Yes, I saw that. Now, I was, you know, the way we eat Taco Supremes, it could happen. I mean, I'll be willing to do it. Would you? I mean, you get so many tacos a month. Now, mind you, that's going to trigger the need for a lot of more plumbers in the world and a lot. So it's the ecosystem.
Yeah. But even you know, I was joking, but even looking at the Taco Bell, you know, I model behind it. Well, why would they even offer that? Well, it's because it would bring people into Taco Bell, because it's a place you also physically have to go get the taco. Mm-hmm. Right. So then when you're there, well, I might as well get a drink. I might as well get something else. Right. Yep. So, but in the same way, even though you don't have to physically go to the lawyer, if you're already paying that monthly subscription, you know, and like you've talked about, you have, if they go outside of what that subscription provides, you make sure they know what it's going to cost, you know, either a flat fee or they bump up into the next subscription tier.
Exactly.
You know, they'll have so many more needs ultimately, and they're already coming to you. And while with Taco Bell, you know, it's not like they're physically coming to you, but they're coming to you. They're paying you every month. They're going to be calling you, asking you questions, and other things will arise inevitably outside of that monthly amount. Because, you know, my conversations with some attorneys who are hesitant about it, they're like, well, aren't I charging too little per month? You know, like, aren't I leaving money on the table? But it's like, it's like being paid for marketing. Like, you're marketing for them. Is that a way to think about it?
Exactly. You would tag the annual subscription to be on the as a preferred provider as a marketing line item on your budget. It's a marketing expense because you're going to be marketed as the go-to provider. If the client is getting good business hotline help from me, they're going to, it goes back to this. People buy from who they know, like, and trust. If they know, like, and trust you, they will continue to buy from you. It's just how it works. It's just the way it is. So if they know, like, and trust me, anybody that I or my fast review will refer you to, you're going to, okay, they came from this service. I like this service. I trust this service. So naturally, any extension of that service is going to follow the same logic. I can know, I can trust, I can like this person because just because of who they associate with, right? Because there's a buy-in from everybody. Everybody had to put up before they could participate. And of course, if we run into issues where we have a referral partner who's not with upholding their obligation, they will, of course, get off the list. So we'll have internal review system. So of course you see how that worked. We just developed, we'll have a directory, we'll have an internal review system based upon the feedback we get from the client. And then that'll determine whether or not, so these are premium things, because if you're not cutting the mustard, as they say, you gotta go.
And let's say somebody's paying you the subscription and a client's paying to be on your subscription, then they need that referral. Our attorneys that you refer to, are they allowed to not offer subscriptions? Like, what if that referral, then they have to switch over to the billable hour? Are you considering that? Or will everyone have to offer some kind of subscription model to be part of the platform?
They would have to definitely show me a package list. They would have to learn how to package their stuff, because the clientele is used to paying in packages, like a flat fee for the service. If you're not comfortable with doing that, or if the client exceeds that scope, that's something different. But we at least have to keep them on something that they're comfortable with. That's sort of like Netflix saying, well, yeah, your subscription comes with our entire database, but if you want to get the latest release, you got to pay $29.99. That's sort of what Disney Plus did,
and,
right?
And that's what Amazon does, you know, too. Sure, you're subscribed to Amazon Prime and you get access to a bunch of videos, but if you want to rent this new movie, it's going to cost you a little extra.
Exactly. So it's not like people are not familiar with that particular model. So if you follow it, it is very aligned to where we are today with subscriptions. And I think if we don't get ahead of this, we're going to get left behind, especially like you talked about in Steve's podcast. There are states now that are allowing non-barred individuals to open up firms and be partners in firms. I think it's Arizona and is it Utah? Arizona. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's scary to me, because if we don't get ahead of this, companies are going to see the land of opportunity that we're missing out on, that we're not cultivating, and come in, and then we're going to be one step behind. I feel like in legal with technology, but for the pandemic, we wouldn't have a lot of the technology advances that people are adapting to. I think virtual hearings, lawyering from a lawyer, another state where we may be on the beach, but our hearing is in Illinois. Right. So, I mean, we are seeing the benefits that technology brings, but look how long it took us to get here. This virtual technology has been here forever. Other industries, the CEOs was in Thailand somewhere doing meetings. Other industries have been doing this. We're just late to the game as usual. I love my profession, but it's the truth. If you think about the technology and where other corporations and industries are, we're so far behind.
Yeah. Looking at other industries and what they're doing with the subscription model, and to try to see what they're doing so that we, the attorneys who are looking at the subscription model, to adapt it to be the innovators in the profession, something we could try to learn from, but I don't really see a lot of it, is how they're incentivizing people stay subscribed. So why do I need to stay subscribed to, you know, Netflix or Disney Plus? I can just watch the show I want to watch and then cancel and then resubscribe later on. I don't see that they're doing anything other than releasing content to try to keep people interested. That's the one thing I see. So what, you know, have you thought about or looked at how to keep people, you know, subscribed, even when, if maybe they're not using your service as much, or they think they've gotten what they need from it?
Yes. And one of the things that I am thinking of adding to the subscription service is something called a hot seat. Now, other consulting, see, what I've learned is study other industries and see what they are doing, and try to see if I can model what other industries are doing. So I service a lot of e-commerce service providers, meaning they're providing their service via the internet in some form or way, whether it's physical or service. So what the service providers and consultants and coaching, because that industry is I feel like it should be regulated at this point. Everybody's claiming they are a coach, but that's neither here nor there. Is hot seats. So you get a community of people together and they get to pretty much ask the experts and they get to network amongst themselves, see what this person is doing and that person is doing. There is money in community. There is money in community. There is money in community. People like community. We need community. And if you don't, let me give you some examples. Your neighborhood is a community. If you like coffee, there's a coffee community. If you like podcasts, there's a podcast community. You like to see what other people are doing in your community. The same thing can be true with the subscription model. Allow people to network, allow people to have the opportunity to build a community around legal subscription. You can do that with a once a month or twice a month hot seat. So if you just want to ask a question, now you could do it different tiers like I plan to do, where the hot seat is available to you and at one tier, but at another tier, you get access to the recordings of the hot seat. Not only do you get to participate, but you get to watch it later. So if you're that FOMO, fear of missing out, is very prevalent in a lot of other communities. We can adopt that in the legal community. So again, it's all about studying what other industries are doing and see how we can adapt that for the legal world.
So a couple of questions come to mind for me with the hot seat idea. And the first is, I'm still kind of trying to understand what that is. Then the second question, okay. Hold on, because you could maybe answer the second question with the first one, is what if your clients, like, what if they don't want people to, like, also know that they are your clients? What if your community of clients don't want that? They want the privacy, even if there's not attorney-client relationship as far as the consulting is concerned, they might not want to be known that they're hiring you. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. So maybe it's not for everyone. So maybe I answered that question on my own. But, like, what do you do? How do you manage expectations there? And still, tell me, what is it? Like, explain a little bit more what the hot seat is.
So a hot seat is where you have people submit questions, of course, and then you select that person's question and they get spotlighted. So like if you were on Zoom or something, they would then, of course, come to the floor. You spotlight them and you have an interaction and you answer their question and you work through it with them. So people, the audience, can see how you are funneling down that person's question. They may have had a similar experience and they can share in the chat about how they got through it, and then that person can go back and review, or they may say, dang, I had that same question too. Okay, I can do that too. Usually, to answer your other question, so that's a hot seat. So where you put somebody in, you select their question, and their question, which is what triggered the hot seat because it's getting answered. If someone doesn't want to participate in the hot seat consulting series, that's fine. You can watch the replay, getting on what tier you are. But of course, remember, you're getting access to your question answered on a one-to-one anyway. So it's a voluntary thing. But like I said, people like community. And if you give people an opportunity to share what their offer is or what their service is, people love that. People love the opportunity to have a platform, however temporary. And it also forces people, you're teaching them other business acumen. For instance, I'm helping you fine tune your elevator speech. But with the hot seat, so at the end of the hot seat series, we can have a 60 second or 30 second, tell me what you do in 30 seconds. Tell me why I should buy from you in 30 seconds. Because the attention span of most consumers is not that long. So you're learning how to do things. You're learning how to network, be in community, how to understand what your ideal is, and all those different things. So I think it's a lot of benefits to community and sharing.
When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney, or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form at scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LawSubscribed at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show.
Yeah, I think community is an interesting incentive because if you're no longer a subscriber, sorry, you're not a part of the community anymore.
That FOMO.
And you know, for some people that's fine, and for others it's not. But that is an interesting incentive, with or without the hot seat or however, whatever you know, community interactions there are. Like, for example, I haven't actually promoted this quite yet, but with Law Subscribed, you know, I of course have to live the name, and you know, people can subscribe to this journalistic endeavor, and one of those membership tiers is join a community on Discord. And See? Then if you stop paying at that tier, you know, to be part of the Law Subscribed, what I'm calling the Brain Trust. Then you're out of the Brain Trust. So in order to stay in, and it's a reasonable amount.
Link in the show notes.
So I 100% buy into that. But for me, it's more of a, you know, maybe ask a few questions here or there, just in a virtual format to keep the community engaged.
Of course, you can do different themes. You can say, we're going to highlight our marketing businesses this week. We can highlight, sort of playing off of what BNI does, you know, that model where it's a paid membership, and you get to spotlight and hear from other members, and there's only so many slots in those businesses. So again, study what has already been done. We're not reinventing the mm-hmm. wheel. We're just tailoring it for certain things. So don't feel intimidated where it's like, these people talking about subscriptions. I don't know about a subscription. What am I doing? I don't know. No. It's already done. You're already probably participating in it and not even sure. Voluntary bars. We're all a part of some form of a voluntary bar. ABA, one of our local voluntary bars, you're paying money to be a part of that voluntary bar with the benefits, access to maybe templates, access to networking events. All of the things that you're getting, you can adapt for your subscription.
And speaking of adapting subscriptions, you've teased, you know, some tiers, some different tiers, maybe some flat fee related stuff. You know, would you, for the audience, explain your thought process on how you decided to go with a tiered model?
Yes, because yes, one of the things that I've noticed a lot with business clients is they don't know what they don't know. And oftentimes they'll come to us with one thing, but it's going to trigger us needing to fix something else. For example, if they know that the goal is to raise $200,000, but they are LLC, that may not be the best entity structure for them for that particular purpose. But they don't know that. All they're coming to you is to fix this partnership agreement because they got somebody that's going to help them. But they ultimately need a lot more than what they came to you with. And you're trying to explain that this is going to trigger X if we do Y. So it's like, how can I fix this? Well, I was thinking of an offer called general counsel in 60 days, how to be a best CEO with the actual teams that you need. A lot of people who are in these executive positions understand they need all these teams and departments, but they may not can afford them. So if you break it down to say, okay, my general counsel packages start at $5,000. Hey, Tom, you can afford $1,800 for 3 months, can't you? Yeah, that's reasonable, Nikosha. $1,800 for legal, I can do that. Boom. That's $900 every 2 weeks.
And that's, you know, for a company too, because I think there's another aspect of the subscription model, which is more of an access to justice, affordability for everyday people.
Yep.
But you're mm-hmm. specifically targeting the business clients. So when you're floating these mm-hmm. numbers out there, and I just, because I've talked on some other shows on Law Subscribed where I talk about affordability for everyday people. So at the numbers you're floating, that is specifically for business clients. So Tom
yes,
or
yes.
John or whomever, that's them as business owner of XYZ
yes.
company.
Yes. Correct. And but another adaptable thing that we can do for just the everyday person, because I used to be what is known like a cousin to the public defenders here in my state. We were the conflict counsel. So I dealt with indigent clients. So I'm familiar with that community of individuals. And so oftentimes they may have hey, I got a speeding ticket. What exactly do I do? They don't want to pay $400, $500, right? No, you can have a subscription model be $47 for a call a month or $37, you know what I'm saying? That's doable for most people, and that's what trigger your subscription to be a volume thing. Not necessarily you will have to say for $37 I need 100 subscribers to make this doable for me. So you have to then plug in on a spreadsheet and figure out how many subscribers you can get, how much it's going to cost you to advertise for that group of people, because you got to know who you're targeting. Mm-hmm. That's, I don't care what business you have. When you hear people say, who are you targeting? That is so, so important, because that's going to help narrow your scope on who and where you market to, how you speak to them, how you're getting those people in your bucket.
And
that's any business.
And you brought up volume, and that reminds me of another theme that's starting to show itself with these interviews I'm doing, and that is the ethics of the subscription model.
Yep.
And of course you could look at just mm-hmm. the ethics of the billing side of it, period. You could also look at the ethics mm-hmm. of, well, if you talk about scaling your you know, your practice with the subscription model, and it's about a volume practice, you know, doesn't it reach a certain point where, you know, you have to say no, or eventually, you know, hire somebody else to help you with the subscription, because it can be a volume practice. And I think that's where the money is, but also how do you know, when the volume has hit the level where, okay, this is a comfortable, you know, maybe it's comfortable. You know, if you're looking at business clients, that's probably going to be a smaller volume. It could still get larger
yes.
than with the billable hour, but
yeah.
But at a certain point, you know, you can only, in order to provide all the services that you're promising, you know, per month or per week or whatever it is, you know, it's like a gym membership. You know, eventually, if enough people show up and there's not enough machines or equipment, you know, you're going to probably start refunding people's, you know, gym membership, right? So how do you balance that? How do you know, when you're hitting that level?
I think that comes in your planning. I think that comes with you sitting down and looking at the numbers of, do a time study. How much time are you currently spending on your cases? Do the research to get the data. I always tell people that numbers don't lie. People do. Numbers don't lie, people do. So are you really spending that much time on your cases? Are you really having that much volume? Because you probably don't. If you really look down at the data, I have X amount of cases, Nicosia. I spend 4 to 5 billables an hour. Okay, well, if we broke down your bill, let's say your billable was $500 a month, right? Oh, an hour, sorry. You in 2 hours made $1,000. How many subscription clients would you have to need to get that $1,000? Okay, well, if I was doing $50, that's how many subscribers? You see what I'm saying? So you would have to do the study, figure out how do they equate, because if that's one less case, that's all it is. I'm only going to take this many subscribers because I'm getting rid of 2 cases. I'm only taking away 3 cases that I would normally take in. I'm going to recapture that with subscriptions. So if your whole model is to balance, because we're not saying this is going to sustain you. Now it may, if you just the awesome at what you do. Now you could be a marketing maven. I'm not knocking nobody, but what I am saying is it's a balancing thing, just like the scales of justice. If I know I'm not taking, a lot of people don't realize how many cases they don't even set quotas for how many cases they take in a month. Their goal is just to get what's in the door because it's paying me and boom. Some firms, we have slots for 20 cases. Our goal is to get 20 new cases this month. But if I have a subscription model and I know my billable hours is 500 and I usually take in X amount of dollars with one case, that's how many subscribers I'm trying to get. And you cap it. So it has to be a understanding the numbers and understanding which model is actually going to work with you for you and your firm's goal. Now, a lot of people don't have goals for their firms. A lot of people don't have visions for where they firm will go. Like, is your goal is to get five partners and name partners, and or is your goal to stay solo? Like, you have to understand where you want to go, because you can't practice forever. You can't do this forever. And a lot of people have the fallacy that this is, instead of creating a business, they're creating a job. And that's where my business stuff comes in. And then I start going off on the la la land. So, but it's the truth. A lot of people are creating jobs. They're not creating businesses. And a law practice is a business.
And that business also needs technology, especially if they're going to launch a subscription model. So what sort of technology, whether it's software, hardware, that you've been looking at or plan on using or are using to try to be successful in the subscription model? And then what software that is missing that you think you need that's out there? Because I imagine legal technologists will also be listening in to the show.
Yes. So I saw this kind of done, and I was like, maybe I can implement it, but I got to figure out a little bit more. So there are some apps called Voxer. There's some apps called Telegram. These are audio. Just think of like Messenger apps where you can send audio messages as well as text messages and video files and GIFs and stuff. So there are subscriptions to where you can have a pro account. I know exactly on Voxer, you can have a Voxer, that's V-O-X-E-R. You can have a pro account where you can save the messages, you can archive them and all these different things. So, and then there's technology with Zapier. So, and these things have desktop apps. So you can like pull messages and then do the zap and have it translate to another app. So basically, I always tell people when you're thinking of legal tech, think buckets. Everything is a bucket. How do I get the information from this bucket to another bucket? And how can the buckets talk to one another to figure out what information that bucket has to the other bucket? If you dumb it down like that, I think it will help people have a better visual aid on what they need. So one of the other platforms that I was definitely considering, and because they have a lot of the things we would need, is Patreon. Patreon has different tiers. You can block off access to certain things, to certain tier groups. So I would consider Patreon. I would consider, I know WordPress has a lot of plugins if you want to create your own website and membership. From what I gather on the University of YouTube, there are pros and cons against some of the paid ones and the free ones. So you just have to do your independent research. But at the end of the day, you need a bucket to get the people in the door. You need a bucket to communicate with them. And you need a bucket to filter information to them. What does that look like? Which buckets? Everybody has their preferences. I know in my firm, I'm a techie. So I use a lot of Mac products and I like that. So for my phone, I use Dialpad, which has a transcription service. You can record messages. And then I use Slack to communicate with my team, which I love. I love Slack. Do you use Slack?
I use Slack, but Discord is like Slack if it was free and better. But it rose up in the video game community as a way for people to chat and live stream with each other while they're playing games, where the other built-in sort of software and platforms failed, and that's where Discord came around. And actually, Sony, I believe, recently, they didn't outright purchase Discord, but they became a large minority stakeholder, I believe, and so they've recently received a huge influx of cash. And so Discord may only get better, and it does everything Slack does and more. And the things that like Slack will charge you, you know, you need a pro account for phone calls and stuff with more than I think one person in there. Discord, you could have like a massive, you know, video voice, you know, chat with a huge party.
Let me write that down. And frankly, Slack is a little pricey.
Yeah, Slack is pricey, and don't get me wrong, Slack is very polished. Right, and it does what it does very well. I do like Slack, and I'm part of several networking groups on Slack. I actually use Slack and Discord primarily for networking as opposed to work, But these are the kind of tools that I think, you know, if you're building communities like you were talking about, or if you're, you know, working with, you know, clients or a team to better effectuate the subscription model, you know, to the clients, then these are the kind of tools that you could use. And even though we're recording this on Zoom and Zoom makes it easy, I've recorded podcasts using Discord as well. So the audio quality is a little bit better using the tools there, but it doesn't record video and audio as well as Zoom, I found. And everyone's on Zoom and it's easy. You click a button. Discord, you have to have an account. So there's barriers, you know, to entry. So something that I did was, in order to record podcasts, I made a dummy account and I just gave the username and password to the guest.
You smart. So, you're smart. Well,
I appreciate that. Thank you. You know, I tried to lower, you know, the friction, right?
Yes. And that is key.
Right. And so there is some friction with Discord since you have to make an account. With Slack, it's like you kind of make an account, but not really. You just put in your email and password and like you never need to type it in ever again.
Yes. And they have integrated with Google, integrated with Microsoft. So you literally, if you have those types of accounts, you just press a button and it's done, right. You know? So I think you're onto something with making it as frictionless as possible.
Right. Right. And I don't think Discord has those kind of integrations. So again, depending on what you're using and what your needs are, you would want to, you know, look at Slack or Discord or other, and there are more and more competitors to those platforms coming out all the time. So
I agree. I think I know a lot of firms use like the Microsoft
Teams.
Teams. Yeah. I don't like Teams. It's a little clunky for me. It's extremely clunky for me. And the UI is just, in my opinion, leaps and bounds behind Zoom. And when I say to UI, I mean friction. Yeah. I don't know how to share a screen on Teams half the time. If the person's camera on, you don't even know they're in the thing. At least with Zoom, even if your camera's not on, I can see the participant list. I can, and then I don't want people knowing that I'm watching the participant list. On Teams, this person is now watching, and then this person has left. And then that Zoom thing that they do with the,
context matters, right? And in certain contexts, that makes sense. But in...
Agreed.
But at least the way I would use it and you would use it doesn't make sense.
Totally different. Yeah. Right. And that's fine. And it's a good tool if that's your baby. If that's what you like, that's what you like. And that's the beauty of being in this world. We find what works for us. And there's that. I know.
Alon, I have a really good transition. I could transition us very well.
Go ahead.
So speaking about diversity in technology, let's talk about diversity in the profession. And I want to bring it back to the start of how we got started, where we teased something for the audience. And I want to make sure we touch on that. Because I feel like we could also stay in the tech rabbit hole for a long time.
Ooh, child. Yes, we can.
So why was it that you originally reached out?
I reached out to you and found you on LinkedIn and Googled your name and did a little, okay, he's at this firm. Okay, this is that email. I don't know the law subscribe, so I'm just going to email his firm and pray they don't get mad that he got an outside emailing. But you said something on Steve Fritzen's Be That Lawyer's podcast that really stood out to me, and it was about the barrier that certain groups of individuals have when it came to entering the legal space. And a lot of people don't share that story. So if you didn't catch these podcasts, pause this, go find it, come back. Welcome back. Was it enlightening? Let me recap. So essentially, Matthew shared that the bar was created and for certain individuals, they were, you know, kept out. And I was like, yes, tell the story. That's it. Certain communities, Jewish communities, Black communities, they weren't welcome, even though they had this education and this skill set, they weren't welcome. So they couldn't practice in certain groups. So they went off and did other things. And those other things are now where the money resides, as we would say. In film, the Jewish people took over the film industry in California. They took it and ran with it. Music, they own it. That's their space. Black community, we had the same barriers too. But that is a challenge for a lot of people to find lawyers that look like them, to find lawyers that can do the things that they do. And these marginalized communities are what's going to enter this subscription space. The marginalized communities are seeing openings and say, I'm not doing good in big law. I'm not making any money in government. Love what I do, but it's stressing me out. don't want to open up my Shingo and just take anything that comes through the door. What can I do? What can I do? This subscription thing is kind of all right. Is it reoccurring revenue? I'm servicing similar style clients. What's the problem? So I think that if we don't open our eyes as practitioners to new things, we're going to get left out once again. And I know for me, I don't want to get left out. I enjoy operating on Al Gore's internets, and that's where I like to reside. So, and I'm going to figure out how to monetize this to my advantage, especially being having a partner, having a child. I have to do things that's going to afford me time to be with them and protect my mental health and my physical health. And subscriptions can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a really important outcome, is the mental health, and getting your time back is super important. But to not let go of the most important, part of what you said too, is a reason why attorneys who don't look like me, and my minority status is that I'm Jewish, but we're not exactly underrepresented in the profession anymore. No. Nope. So, but attorneys that look like me, the billable hour, the legacy model that I've been referring to it as, is working for them. But but you look at ABA data from 2021 on the profession, and it's not working for women. It's not working for attorneys of color, the legacy model.
No.
And it's not right that it's not working, and it should work, but because it's taking too long to change for the better, attorneys that the system isn't working for are going to look and be more open-minded to these other opportunities, because the system it wasn't built for them, and it's not working for them. And the attorneys who look like me are going to look at it and say, well, this people are paying me $500 an hour, $1,000 an hour. So I'm going to keep doing that. Why wouldn't I?
Exactly.
And so
why change? Right?
So I think that women, the attorneys of color, that minority attorneys are going to look at this model and see it as an opportunity, and they're going to succeed. And that's sort of what I'm trying to do, is to inspire that with Law Subscribed. And so the fact that, and I've been shouting into a void, Nikwosha. So the fact that resonated with
you. There are people, it did. And that's what motivated me. I was like, this guy, he's onto something. He is speaking my language. This is what I've been preaching forever. We have got to disrupt the model. If you want to spark change, you have to disrupt it peacefully. I'm not saying go out here and just block traffic, but you have to understand where it's going wrong and figure out some form of solution and actually try it. Or what a lot of people get hung up on is they may have a solution, but they won't have action. And I'm finding that a lot in businesses too. We'll have great solutions, but we won't act on it. Or we won't understand that the reason why our business won't flow better is because we're the bottleneck. We're the problem.
Right.
So there is that.
And so I really think that we're going to see that. And then communities that can't afford legal services right now will now see lawyers mm-hmm. who look like them and have affordable, services and there's going to be more access to justice, and attorneys are going to make more money, which is not a bad thing.
I think you're on to something, and I think we need to pass around the collection plate so that way we can, handsomely compensate you for shouting this to the rooftops. So don't feel like you're that crazy guy that we all know on the corner of our street with the bullhorn or the speaker, the little karaoke speaker, shouting out Bible scriptures. And we all, y'all know what character in your neighborhood, no matter where you are, there's a certain individual who you just pray for them and keep them moving. But as it relates to this, we're going to pray for you and participate. We won't keep it moving. I know I won't.
I appreciate that so much, but I will end on a little bit of a crazy question for you. And that is,
oh Lord,
is a hot dog a sandwich, and why?
Is a hot dog a sandwich? It depends on what I put on it.
Okay, go on.
And my hot dog, I know you're from Chicago, so the Chicago dog has a whole bunch of stuff on it. Pickles, mustard, onion, all that stuff. To me, a hot dog is a sandwich. And the reason why a hot dog is a sandwich is because it's a fix between one slice of bread that's sliced down the middle. So it's a one breaded sandwich. It has a piece of meat and the fixings in between. What's the difference?
I love it. I'll take it. Answer accepted. Answer accepted.
Oh, thanks. Because I was waiting, like, Professor, is that it? I didn't get to study. I don't have an outline.
I don't want to prep you for that one because it's so much more interesting to see people, you know, people's answers.
What's on your hot dog, though? What you putting on your Chicago dog?
I grew up a very picky eater, and while my wife has done wonders to change that for me, I still just love a good old plain hot dog. Just meat and bread. Mm-mm-mm.
No ketchup, no mustard? Because if you're putting ketchup, I got to get off this podcast.
No ketchup, no mustard. But... And you've been giving me the best transitions I've had yet. But it is time for you to get off this podcast because we've been talking for an hour.
Goodbye. And I like mustard on mine.
But before but before you go, tell my audience if they want to follow up with you, where's the best place they could find you?
I am usually on Instagram at Esquire44. And if you want to research more about my firm or if you have some business law questions with IP protections, I can be reached at AndersonLawFL.com. And all of these things will be in the show notes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for sponsoring this show. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with someone you think would find a value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kerbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kerbis with Law Subscribed.